Right now, though, on the phone with us from Mountain Trails Foundation, it's Clay Cars. Hi, Clay.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Great. So what you got going on?
Well, not a whole lot of new stuff to report this week, but wanted to give a big thanks and shout out to all the Tour de Suds volunteers and participants from last Sunday. It was unprecedented. We sold out this year on the Friday before Sunday. So for all the locals that showed up day of, next year, you definitely want to register early. Of course, you know, the weather is got our first fall day here, and weather's looking good for some really good riding.
Okay. Anything
else? Yeah, that's all we got today.
Okay. Thanks, Clay. KPCW News Time now, 8:27. Good morning. Well, the superintendent of the North Summit School District has been named as the 2019 Utah School Superintendent of the Year. Jerry Holmes joins me now on the phone. Good morning and congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So any idea who nominated you for the honor?
Well, no. It's simply a vote of all of the 41 superintendents, and I was fortunate enough to get the most votes, I guess.
Well, great. This is your eighth year as superintendent of the North Summit School District, but you really have spent your entire career in education. Can you kind of give us the Reader Digest version?
Yes, I started in the Ogden School District back in the 80s, and I was a teacher and a coach there, and then I went to Rich School District for 9 years, and then in 2000 came to North Summit and was a assistant principal, then the principal, and then eventually, as you said, the last few years superintendent.
Yeah, so you got your bachelor's degree, I believe, at the University of Utah, then went on to get a master's in education?
Yes, at Utah State.
Yeah. At what point did you know you wanted to get into the education field?
Oh, I was in high school and had two great English teachers, and one of those was my football and basketball coach, and just simply looked up to those guys and saw the impact they had on my life and many of those around me, and it just was a draw for me.
Yeah, I still remember mine, Dave Casey. How about that? Coach and an English teacher, right? So as superintendent, I mean, what do you think your biggest contribution has been to the North Summit School District?
Well, I hope that I've been a morale builder. I'm proud of a lot of the initiatives that we've done. We're a one-to-one technology school or district. Probably the thing that I'm most proud of is that our culture here is now of we do everything we can to not let kids slip through the cracks. We have a lot of kids who come with emotional baggage, with maybe problems at home, and other issues that we believe that an adult relationship can help that kid through that problem, and obviously there are times when we have to refer those kids to those who are more specialized in therapy or whatever, but we call it I Swear, and it's mainly just making sure that students have access to all of the resources that we have available, but mainly an empowering adult relationship.
So tell me how that works. I mean, you call it I Swear. It stands for Inspired Students with Empowering Adult Relationships. So how does that work?
Well, we have a committee, and we sit down monthly, and we review, go over students that are in emotional distress of one kind or another. It might be academic, it might be behavioral, but typically it's emotional. And we bring leaders from each of our buildings, and we talk about those kids, and we either assign teachers to them. And the great thing about that I'm seeing happen now is it's happening naturally. The meeting is just a formality, but we just make sure that we're providing those resources for that kid. And even if it means we just someone's putting their arm around him or her, it's fairly informal, but it's paying dividends for us because we're paying more attention to those kids. It's easy to love the ones that don't have any problems, but it takes a little more effort to love that kid that maybe is belligerent at times or is angry or doesn't want to speak. But those are the kids we need to pay more attention to.
Right. I mean, and I think that's probably something you have seen in your career is just how school districts now having to deal with the mental wellness of our students. It used to be just about, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Absolutely. You know, and back in the day, as you know, when someone was depressed or feeling anxious, we were just told to suck it up and get through it. And we now realize that mental wellness is as important as physical wellness, and we're much more knowledgeable about it now. And it's made us realize that the importance of our counselors and the importance of therapists, psychologists, and we don't have access to a lot of that. Valley Mental Health is a partner with us through the county, and that's a help. But each day we see more and more the need for our need of our own therapists.
Right. And we hear a lot. We hear a lot about just how social media and, you know, the internet has kind of contributed to some of this stress and anxiety that young people feel of, you know, and at the same time here, it's like, well, here, take a computer, go spend more time online. There's got to be some kind of balance there, I guess, and that's probably hard to do.
Well, it's a real hard balance. We put laptops in the hands of our kids or iPads with our younger kids, but that doesn't seem to be the bigger problem. And we do balance that. It's more that phone that's attached to them 24/7, and you're right. The social media, the reliance on texting and all of those other things they use. I think the bullying becomes a lot more prevalent because it's so much easier to say it when you're hiding behind a phone rather than looking someone in the eye. And so, yeah, our kids are dealing with a completely different lifestyle than we grew up with.
I'm not sure we have seen anything like that as a result in terms of our curriculum, you know, some kind of personal relationships or personal communication, because I think that's what kids are losing, the art of talking to one another as opposed to texting.
Well, you're right. It's interesting to get on a bus with a group of kids going to a game or an activity, and you would think that it's loud kids screaming and carrying on, and a lot of times it's as quiet as a library because they all have their face in that phone, and I don't think it's healthy. I think it's extremely important for kids to socialize and have to communicate, as you said. And so that probably will be the next thing on our plate that we're now going to have to, I don't know if we'll have to maybe have certain times of the day or the week or the month that we just remove all phones. I don't know. It'll be one more responsibility for schools.
Right, right. Before you took on the superintendent's role, you did teach and coach. The North Summit Braves football and basketball teams had great runs under your tenure. What do you think you brought to the field or the court?
Well, first and foremost, there were good athletes on those teams, and I've always believed you have to have the good ponies in the race in order to have a chance, and we did have that, and I think more than anything, I just tried to inspire and motivate kids to be better than they thought they could be. You know, everyone has their own idea of strategies and which offense or defense you use, but I think it boils down to kids believing in themselves, believing in each other, believing that they worked harder during the week than their opponent and that they're better prepared, and then the energy and power of adrenaline, and that's what I tried to inject into them was being excited about playing and getting more out of themselves than they ever thought they could.
And one more challenge I wanted to talk to you about, and that is, I think for school districts, is finding and keeping good teachers. How have you been able to do that in North Summit?
Well, we've been fairly fortunate. The fact that we're a small community and many of our teachers are from here. We believe in the grow your own philosophy if we can, but we've also brought in some great people who have found a niche in our community and feel like they want to stay. It just seems like it's obviously money plays a part in all of this, but I think it's also community related, and if we can get young teachers in here with their families or if they're single, if we can help them fit into this community, and we do have a great community, and so that's been a help to us. I think if teachers know that we at the district office care about them and are willing to do whatever we can to help them, we were able to give a significant raise this last go around, and that helps. But I think it's the overall environment that they feel in being here, and we give them, when they go into their classroom, we're not standing above them, making them do exactly what we want them to do. We give them autonomy to create that world that they've been dreaming of being a part of and being in charge of, and so I think there are a lot of factors involved, but it is a concern.
All right. Jerry, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, other than I appreciate this opportunity, and I guess the thing that I would want to express mostly is any success I've had is because of great people around me, and any recognition for me is, I hope, a credit to our teachers and staff who are the ones in the trenches taking care of our kids.
Okay. Again, congratulations, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
It's Jerry Holmes, the superintendent of the North Summit School District, again named as the 2019 Utah School Superintendent of the Year. KPCW News Time, 8:40. Well, since 1968, the Public Lands Council has actively represented the cattle and sheep producers who hold public lands grazing permits. The organization is celebrating its 50th anniversary next week right here in Park City. Joining us on the phone, I have the president of the Public Lands Council, Dave Eliason. Good morning.
Good morning.
So besides being an advocacy organization, I mean, anything else that the Public Lands Council actually does?
Well, it kind of joins the forces of the sheep industry and the cattle industry to kind of deal with the administration's rules and regulations that come out of Washington. We also help the public lands ranchers any way we can if they have problems with their range cons, or sometimes we get involved in lawsuits when there's something we feel that's not a fair action. So we'll get in and fight for them. But we really are there to help the 22,000 public lands ranchers in the country. That's our sole purpose, is just to defend and preserve and protect these ranchers.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, that you're hosting the 50th anniversary celebration here in Park City. Why did you choose Park City?
Oh, Park City is a beautiful place. Usually they have the convention in the state where the president lives, and I always wanted Park City. I love Park City. And it's kind of a central place because it's easy to get to with Salt Lake being so close to it. And it's just turned out to be a really fabulous place, so we're really excited to be there. It's got the amenities that we need, and we're excited to be there.
Yeah, how many people you got coming?
Well, we're 250 or so. I think we're going to be pretty close to that.
Okay, and I mean, you've got, looks like you've got what, 3 full days of events, and what? Can you give us an idea of what's going to be taking place?
Yeah, well, we've got all the heads of the BLM and Forest and Wish Fish and Wildlife. They're all going to be there and be able to deal with those. We're also celebrating, as I just said, the 50th anniversary, so we're going to have some of the past presidents tell a little bit of history about it. And then we've got some speakers that talks about some of the different insurance that we can carry on that, just anything really that has to do with public lands ranching. I think that it'll be, and then we'll have a great banquet. We're going to take the gondola up onto the top of the mountain to have our annual presence banquet. So that's going to be really nice, where we're going to be pretty with all the leaves are changing and so forth. So a lot going on, but we're sure excited to be there.
Yeah. So these are just members, or are they just representatives from each of the states where grazing is taking place? Or
yeah, they're representing each state in the West. Past public lands grazing will have representative there, people there. There'll also be a lot of agency people. I mean, like the BLM and forest personnel, they'll be there looking in internet work there. There's just anybody who's kind of interested. There'll be some families coming there. Park City has a lot of entertainment possibilities, great restaurants. But yeah, they're many members of the public lands and public lands industry.
Yeah, and I'm just looking through the agenda. I mean, some of the topics that you've got, like 45-hour-long conversations on, the business of opposition, dealing with anti-multiple-use groups around the rest, outcome-based grazing, exploring opportunities and program success, another one, understanding the political climate, Western issues in the desert. You know, your organization, my understanding, fought for the reduction of the Bears Ears National Monument in southern Utah. How come?
Well, we fought for it because it has a great effect on grazing. You know, when they become a national monument, different rules apply. It makes it a lot of times very difficult. You know, the access is really restricted. And generally, like with the Grand Escalade Monument down there, you know, almost a third of the grazing was eliminated. It's a beautiful place, and ranchers take care of it. You know, it's our livelihood. If we don't take care of the land, it won't take care of us. And also, you know, the local population, they were all in favor of not putting to reduce that monument. So, you know, we're helping with the local people.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, how does the public benefit, though, from leasing out its public lands? My guess is that the leases don't raise nearly the kind of money that the tourism industry has raised for areas like the Grand Staircase.
Well, I guess you take a look at what happened down to Boulder and down to the Grand Escalade. You know, that school down there before the monument had 150 students in the high school. Now they're afraid they're going to have to close it because everybody leaves. You know, there's tourism comes in, but many of those jobs pay minimum wage. You know, studies have shown that the economic growth is not near as good as it is before the monument. A lot of jobs were lost in logging and grazing and ranching, and so it's for people who rely on the public lands for their livelihood, it's not a good thing.
We've had a terrible wildfire season here in the West, particularly here in Utah, as you know. The organization claims that ranching can help with that. How?
Oh, very simple. Take, for example, that Martin fire in Las Vegas, or not in Nevada. Because of the sage-grouse restrictions placed on that land, because it was in prime habitat, that land, 400,000 acres, most of it wasn't able to be grazed in the last 2 or 3 years. So the fuel load had increased to like 2 tons the acre. So when the fire started in there, it just burned like crazy. There was no stopping it. We need to, just like the forest, we need to graze, reduce the fuel load, and everything. There's the saying goes that you can graze it, you can log it, or burn it. Take your choice. But that's a very simple rule that our grazing has been restricted. The logging has been restricted in these places, too. And so it's just created kind of a timber box.
On Saturday, you'll be touring some ranches in the area, including Steve Oskethorpe's allotment. I'm not sure if this is the one in Round Valley or perhaps the 158 acres that we're working to protect. But what we're looking at is these are public lands, or are we talking about private property that these, I mean, when you talk
no, we'd
about...
No, we'll be touring public lands.
Public lands that these folks allotment on.
They're allotments.
Got it. So what is it that you're going to be looking for?
Just some of the improvements that they've made and how grazing benefits the land and, you know, just how things, how they've improved it and the projects they've done to make it better. Generally, and always, you know, like I said, if you take care of the land, it'll take care of you.
So, in terms of ranching, I mean, is it a viable future, or is this a dying occupation here?
No, it's not. Definitely not a dying occupation. It's a very viable. It's a good ranch, a good opportunity, and you know, it's a way of life. It depends on the prices and weathers. There's a lot of variables, but generally, it's a good way of living. We're not getting rich, but it's what we want to do and what we do. We sometimes become asset rich and cash flow poor, but it's definitely not a dying occupation. There's a lot of strong ranchers and a lot of strong operations up in the Park City area as we now speak.
Yeah. And then this whole notion of going towards grass-fed beef, I mean, has that helped the industry as well, as opposed to those in the, you know, the big stockhouses with grain-fed cows?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's quite a niche in the beef market is the grass-fed beef, and it's growing in popularity. And so, you know, it just depends on how you like your meat. If you're really health conscious and really just want strictly lean, you know, you buy the grass-fed marked beef. If you want stuff that really tastes really good and it's still good for you, then the grain-fed ones are ones to buy.
Okay. Again, you'll be here at the Public Lands Council annual meeting and 50th anniversary celebration taking place September 26th through the 29th. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it, Dave.
Yes, you're welcome.
KPCW News Time now, 8:50. It's the local news hour on KPCW. 8:50 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, tomorrow's your chance to bring friends and family and build your own scarecrow that'll be displayed on the McPullen Farm Trail for everyone else to see. Through sometime in October in the studio with details, I have a member of the Friend of the Farm, Steve Arndt, along with Minda Stockdale, the McPullen Farm Manager. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Steve, you want to start? I mean, it's happening tomorrow, 2 to 4. Is it too late to register for someone?
By all means, no. In fact, part of why we're here is because we do have a few tickets left to be purchased before tomorrow. The tickets will be on sale until noon. I'll let Minda go over the details of how to purchase those in just a minute. But the event is from 2 to 4 tomorrow afternoon at the farm. And it's the first day of fall, of course, officially. So what a great way to celebrate fall and our agricultural heritage here in the area, but then building a scarecrow.
Okay. Well, tell us just a little bit about the background. I mean, it's what? I mean, what is the activity? Minda, you want to take it?
Yeah. So this is an event that's been going on for almost 20 years at the farm. It's a great community local event, and it's the Scarecrow Festival. So we have the event, which happens tomorrow from 2 to 4, as we've said, and then you can also buy a ticket, which is a non-event ticket, to put up to build your scarecrow at home and put it up on the trail if you'd like to sort of do it on your own.
Okay, so the fee ranges, again, between $20 and $40, depending on what you provide?
Yes, exactly. So both tickets, so we, we have two types of tickets. One is the event ticket and one is the non-event ticket. And both of those will get you a scarecrow support. So today we're going to go out with the Friends of the Farm and install crosses along the farm trail. So you might see those if you're out there today. Those are what hold the scarecrows up. So both tickets will get you one support for your scarecrow and a packet that has zip ties and twine and a name tag for your scarecrow. And then the event ticket additionally includes entrance to the event tomorrow. And we have face painting, pumpkin painting, cider and cookies, music. It's just a really fun and great event for kids and families.
Okay. How do people register?
So both tickets are online through the PC Mark. So parkcityrecreation.org. You can also get a direct link to tickets at the McPullen Farm website, which is parkcity.org, www.parkcity.org, and go to the McPullen Farm. And we still have both types of tickets available, and they will be on sale through noon tomorrow. So the link will close at noon.
Okay. So what do people need to bring?
Great question.
Yeah. So you need to bring your scarecrow ready to be assembled, essentially. Again, as Minda said, we're going to put up about 60 scarecrow support structures this afternoon, and you have to bring everything to get the scarecrow up there other than we will provide the zip ties.
And the stuffing.
And the stuffing, correct.
We have hay. So if you – both types of tickets, you can come from 2 to 4 and stuff your scarecrow. And then we do ask if you buy the non-event ticket to please not put your scarecrow up after 4 o'clock tomorrow.
So prep a scarecrow head, body, feet, any props, any decorations you want to have with your scarecrow. And we invite people to make these things, you know, kind of wild and crazy if they'd like. The one thing we do ask is that they not be used as a means for advertising a business or, you know, anything commercial. It's not that type of event. The scarecrows are really out to be on the farm trail for everybody to enjoy in the community for the next month. October 19th, I think, is the date we're scheduled to take them down so people can bring them home and put them up for Halloween at their own homes.
Okay. So what about political scarecrows, okay? Depends.
I think you can put your name as a candidate maybe on the label that we will give you. But, yeah, we're not looking for signs or shirts or signage or anything like that. This is really meant to celebrate the fall and, again, our agricultural heritage here in Park City.
Yeah. So what about the head? I mean, do you need a burlap bag? I mean, how do people make heads?
Oh, my gosh. The options are endless. We've had soccer ball heads, plastic pumpkin heads, burlap. I mean, you can get creative. The only thing that doesn't work so well is an actual pumpkin because they do rot and kind of create a mess. We've seen it all.
All right. What else is the Friends working on?
We have three events every year. We have the Winter Snowshoe in February. We've got Your Barn Door is Open in June. And so this is one of the trifecta of our main events. And they all raise money to help support some of the things we do at the farm. What are we working on right now? Minda, help me out here.
Yeah, well, last year we celebrated the opening of the barn, which was went through its structural upgrade. And so this summer we're hoping to roll out some tours of the barn. So we'll have small groups who can go through the barn and see that and see all the progress that we've made. And sort of another branch of the city, but you may have driven by and seen the cows out there. So we have we're working on our carbon sequestration initiatives by using livestock out at the farm. And that's something that the Friends are excited about, too. And then the Friends of the Farm really are just our incredible stewards of the site and work on things like signage and interpretation through these events. All the ticket sales benefit them, and we are just so thankful to them and to the City Council for their support of these events.
And for the record, we are – it's a Friends group. It's we are advisory we provide advocacy to the city staff. We're not an official board or commission established by the City Council. We are volunteers that help support specific events or ongoing programming at the facility. There's a number of Friends groups in the city that support other areas like trails, golf, racket, sports.
Okay.
We're just one of those friend group.
I just learned the word allotment in the last interview there. So now that we've got cattle grazing there on the farm, whose allotment is that? I mean, whose cows are they?
Oh, they are Bill White's nonprofit, Bill White Farms. So he is a partner on the project. And I just learned allotment too. I didn't know that. But yes, those are his cattle. Who you see out there.
Yeah. And even with the upgrades that we've made now to the building, it's still kind of a hands-off, even though it's kind of this public icon, what just because there's no parking. I mean, we've never really seen, other than the three events there, weddings or public events taking place. Is that ever going to change?
Yeah. Thanks for that question. Really, with the site, Our goal is to balance the preservation of the buildings and its historic qualities with public enjoyment. So it is a public open space area. So people can enjoy the space out there and have picnics, and it's always open. And the facilities themselves, we are working to slowly and incrementally sort of increase access to the barn, and also balance the impacts so that it's here for the next 100 years.
I think that's right, Leslie. And I would just second that. You know, the city, since it acquired the property in 1990, has been very careful with helping it not be overrun, or, you know, incremental steps, as Minda just said. And you're correct in that parking is and can be an issue. Also, restrooms, you know, there's only a certain capacity that we can have out there on the site. And can I just make a point as to parking with respect to the Scarecrow Festival tomorrow between 2 and 4? We do encourage people to carpool or take the bus. I think the pink and the lime lines stop at the barn. We strongly discourage anybody to park along 224. It's very dangerous and risky. And if you do park across the street at the Quarry Mountain lot, make sure to use the tunnel underneath. So I'm going to be standing out by the road to help direct people away and make sure people aren't playing Frogger to get across.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be a great day to ride your bike, to walk, and enjoy this beautiful fall weather.
Okay. Hey, Minda and Steve, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks,
Leslie.
Leslie.